Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
I'm Nikki Drews.
And I'm Cheryl Creepyhole.
And this is Killers, Cults and Queens,
the podcast where we're going to learn all about the spookiest, scariest and damn right weirdest corners of the 5'2" world.
In this episode, we're dusting off our miniskirts and our go-go boots and heading back to the swinging 60s to explore part two of our Manson family special.
The fact that Charles Manson is 5'2" means the world to me. I'm getting around, I get around.
In a stolen car.
Woo, magic school bus.
His house was filled with unwashed, gonorrhea-ridden Manson family members. Welcome home.
Oh my Christ, don't
Stinks
sit on the
it.
Sofa.
Are you ready?
As long as the Austin Powers theme tune is playing, I'm ready.
Welcome to Killers, Cults and Queens, the show where we take you on a journey into the darkest corners of the world. Today, we're all getting back on board the crazy train and delving deeper into the horrific world of the Manson family and their head honcho, Charles Manson. But before all that, how you been doing?
Do you know what? I've been good. I've actually gone away and watched that 5'2" documentary, which Gaga had the composer from. I can't watch it the same anymore, knowing that there was a criminal behind bars doing the underscoring.
Any subliminal messages that have seeped into your mind?
Other than Charles Manson is 5'2".
You're always going to remember that now, aren't you?
That's going to be my one
seared,
fact.
Seared into the brain.
Look, I'm a stickler for useless information that adds nothing to my life. And the fact that Charles Manson is 5'2" means the world to me.
It's going to be a good little pub fact, I think, that one.
Pub? I'm going to be on stage just telling people.
Yeah, you're just going to be like, right, okay, before my next number, did you know? I'm Cheryl Creepy Hole.
Oh my God, right, look, okay. That was something I never thought would happen. The inmate, what was his name? Angus Creepy something?
Oh yeah, so he was somebody creepy something.
Yeah.
Just creepy, I think.
And unfortunately, fine. I have been plagued by people tweeting me, calling me Cheryl Creepy Hole ever since. So thanks, guys. Thanks a lot.
Well done, everybody. That was good.
I feel like a victim here in this situation.
Oh, well, we're going to get into more victim stuff shortly. So,
yeah. I mean, this is a two-parter. We've been building up to this. So this is the moment.
So if you've not listened to last week's episode, then please head back now so you're up to speed, because we're going to pick up right where we left off last time. So just to bring everyone back up to speed, I'm going to put you on the spot here. Do you want to give us a very quick recap of everything you remember from last time?
Christ. Okay.
Just right. Bullet points.
15-year-old mum births Charles Manson.
Yep.
He sets fire to the rain and steals lots of cars, gets in trouble, pimps out girls, goes to prison a lot, breaks parole a lot, forms a cult, librarian, LSD. Boom.
You made it.
Did I do it?
You did.
Did I cover everything?
You did cover everything. Yeah.
Fabulous. Yep. Pat on the back for me.
Excellent. So we last left our vile protagonist, Charles Manson, as he was searching for a new home for his obedient followers after they'd been living on a bus for a while. Charles came up trumps when he stumbled across an abandoned ranch, which had at one time also doubled as a film set, which went by the name of Spahn Ranch. Spahn Ranch was owned by George Spahn. He'd bought the property in the early 50s, making it look like an old Western village for TV and movie shoots. It was pretty popular and lots of films and TV shows were shot there, such as Bonanza and The Lone Ranger. However, the Western TV show craze of the 1950s was dwindling, and by the late 60s, the ranch was being booked less and less and began to fall into disrepair. George was in his 80s by this point and was struggling to keep up with the management of such a vast property, and so when some girls came knocking on his door asking if they and some friends could move into the ranch in return for caring for the place, he jumped at the chance.
Of course he did.
Little did George know, the family had actually been living on the ranch for a number of weeks.
How?
They'd been living on the outskirts of the ranch in some caves, which George's 80-year-old legs didn't venture to.
No, he couldn't manage the back cave in his old age.
No, so they'd already been stealing from him anyway.
Christ alive.
The offer of work in return for bed and board seemed like the perfect deal to George. Charles and his family would take over the day-to-day running of the business. They'd look after the ranch and the horse rental business he ran, and in return, George would just have to let them live in the buildings that were just accumulating dust anyway. They even threw in a maid for George in the form of Lynette Froome, and it was here she earned the nickname Squeaky. Remember we met her before?
Squeaky Clean?
Squeaky is back. Not Squeaky Clean. Oh. It would be good if that was the case.
I thought you were setting this up for the perfect introduction of Squeaky Clean, Lynette.
It would be. It would be, wouldn't it? But no, unfortunately not. It's a little bit darker than that.
Oh.
George said that Lynette squeaked any time he would touch her.
Oh, no.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Oh, no.
Yeah, we're already delving into that kind of realm of things, I'm afraid. For lonely elderly George, this young presence on his ranch was just what he needed, and he was pleased with the arrangements, calling them good kids. He's going to regret that later, isn't he? Once settled into their new film set, ranch hand lives and now disconnected from the outside world in the middle of the desert, Charles begins to up the ante on the cult behaviour and tells the family that if they were going to exist in harmony, they would need some rules.
This is how it begins. The cult rules.
Yep.
One, don't pick up the phone. You know, he's only calling because he's drunk and alone.
It's always the way, though, isn't it? There's always bloody rules.
It starts off like, happy, happy house, happy house, happy house, in the words of Katrea, Big Brother 7. No, Big Brother 9. But it always ends up in rules, regulations, and punishment.
Yep.
And go on. Tickle me with these rules.
Okay, so there are no clocks, calendars or watches permitted. Only Charles can know what date and time it is.
Control.
There are no prescription glasses allowed, as Charles wants his followers to see the world as it really is, or not. If you haven't got your glasses, you're not going to be able to see what's going on.
Oh, yeah. So God has decided that you are blind, so you can't see the world. Soz hun.
Yeah. Doesn't really make much sense.
Right.
The family had to take acid when Charlie said so, and at the dosage he prescribed. He directed which people should sleep with each other, and he was allowed to sleep with anyone he wanted, when he wanted, and as Charles would go on to confirm in later life, he was bisexual, so this could be any of the cult members, regardless of their own sexual preference. And he said they would do this to make sure everyone was connected to him personally.
Okay, so it was like the full circle moment. Everybody in the cult always comes back to him.
Yeah. So, yeah. So he's got that personal control over them. Charles would also pimp out the girls of the family to men he wanted to keep sweet or impress. Even allegedly 80-year-old George Spahn. So that's where I was saying about Lynette.
Squeaky.
Yeah. Not very nice. Lynette. Well, I don't know. She still loves him in later life, so.
Oh, God. Is she the one that's still...
She's the one that's still...
Oh yeah. My God. Even in 2022, she's the hype girl for Charles Manson.
Yep.
I can't believe that.
Essentially, Charles owned you, but he did this with a sneaky caveat that people didn't have to do anything they didn't want to do. But in all actuality, if family members didn't actually comply, they may not have been punished at the time, but they would be later, and Charles would dish out beatings to a lot of the girls.
That's really dark.
I know, it's horrible, isn't it?
I know.
And it's all this whole thing of, oh, you don't need to do anything that you don't want to do, but I will beat you later.
You can't say one thing and then it's another, you know?
With all this free love and pimping out of his girls, there was a big, costly problem in the Manson family, and that was, drumroll please,
chlamydia.
The other one.
Gonorrhea.
There you go.
Oh, I'm not surprised.
No.
It takes one person and then there's bish, bash, bosh.
Everybody's got it.
Yeah. Oh, dear.
The religious LSD orgies had caused a big costly problem for Manson, with his girls having to get treatment for their afflictions, which racked up into the thousands.
Oh my God, it's because they're in America and you have to pay for everything. You can't just go to the gum clinic down the road here, you know? Oh dear, no wonder. Yeah.
And even then, it was in the thousands. You know, we're not talking today's prices, which are thousands and thousands.
Yeah.
This is already in the thousands.
Yeah.
So pretty expensive for people that have no money. Manson himself wasn't spared catching the clap either. And in the end, he would manipulate someone famous into paying for his $1,000 treatment. But more on that in a little while.
Oh, I can't wait for that.
Yeah, you're going to enjoy that one. It's very, very odd. Isolated away from the rest of the world and taking a lot of drugs, Charles's preachings were becoming more and more convoluted. He taught his followers that they were obviously the reincarnations of the first Christians persecuted by the Romans. Of course they were.
Right. Drugs will do wild things.
Of course, of course. The Romans in this New Age analogy were now the establishment, and they had to turn away from the establishment in order to find enlightenment. So we're starting to get into the realms of crazy now. This is where it's all heading. It's all starting to unravel.
And the writing's on the walls.
And it will be later on as well. Charles, who had been indoctrinated into religion when he was younger by his religious auntie and also during his time in institutions, was starting to believe he was the reincarnation of Jesus Christ, telling his followers that he had dreams where he was being crucified. He even changed his name to Charles Willis Manson, reciting it slowly to people so it sounded like Charles Will is man's son, attempting to make a connection with Jesus, the Son of God.
People would say anything to make it, like, I wouldn't have ever pieced that together.
No.
Drugs.
Yeah.
Don't do them. Wow.
That's basically all we needed to do for this episode was just go, Charles Manson, drugs.
Drugs.
The end. Bye.
Wow.
Also, around this time, as things were becoming weirder, the Manson family welcomed a baby.
Well, I'm guessing Charles is the father.
Obviously.
Who's the mother?
So, do you remember Mary Brunner, the first follower?
The librarian.
The librarian.
She's the babby mama.
She's the babby mama.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I was not expecting that.
No, so she is. So, she gave birth to a baby boy who was obviously fathered by Manson. So, that was now his third son.
Yeah.
And they called him, not Charles this time.
I was going to say, if this is a third Charles Jr., I think the Jeremy Carl show is going to have a field day with this.
Yeah. Do you want to take a guess at his name? It's a very odd one. I don't think you'll get it.
Barnabas.
No.
Bartholomew.
No. Think February the 14th.
Valentine. Soppy bastard.
So, Valentine was named after a character in Charlie's favourite book, A Stranger in a Strange Land, which we learned about earlier.
Yes.
Ever since he'd left prison, Charlie had been obsessed with playing the guitar, constantly noodling away in classic hippie commune style. He had been playing around with some songs, getting the girls to dance and sing along, and he figured he had what it took to break into the music biz.
Of course.
Of
drugs.
Course. Yeah. Do what he wants at this point.
Yeah.
Steal a car. Break into the music biz. It's fun.
Break parole.
Yeah, break into the music biz.
Get number one on the top 40.
Yeah, logical next step, I think.
Yeah, stepping stones.
Yeah. He had been sending demos out to record companies left, right and centre, trying to get someone to bite, but to no avail. Which is very odd, as to his followers, he was preaching about how the establishment was to be razed to the ground, but here he was trying to be invited into it. He did, however, make an interesting connection with one of the Beach Boys.
The actual Beach Boys.
The actual Beach Boys, Surfing USA and all of that.
Round, round, get around, I get around.
In a wow. stolen car.
Woo, Magic School Bus. Oh my God, do you remember that TV show, The Magic School Bus?
I do,
Jump
yeah.
on the Magic School Bus. Oh my God, I'm not gonna stop thinking about them stealing these poor innocent children's. What was the teacher's name in that?
Mrs. Frizzle? Frazzle.
Miss Frizzle.
Miss yeah. Frizzle.
Yeah, something like that. Imagine her walking out into the car park to go, where's our bus gone, kids? And the man's family's driving around in it, painting it black with spray paint as they're driving down the highway.
Later, losers.
With a surfboard on the top because they've just hired a Beach Boy. Christ alive. You can't make this up. You really cannot make this stuff up.
No, you can't.
Anyway, tell me about the Beach Boy.
So, one day, the drummer of the band, 24-year-old Dennis Wilson, was driving home when he saw two young girls on the side of the road. They were hitchhiking, looking for a lift home, so he pulled over and picked them up. When the girls got back to Manson and told him, he ordered that they get back out there and find Dennis again. But this time, they were to sleep with him. A few days later, he saw the girls hitchhiking again, but this time they didn't want to go home. As Charlie had instructed, the girls propositioned Dennis, and he took them back to his fancy house in the Hollywood Hills.
Oh, so it begins.
On the way, they got chatting about spirituality, and of course, as it was the 60s, everyone had their own personal guru. Dennis was telling them about the Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, who was a guru to the rich and famous. Later going on tour with the Beach Boys and becoming personal spiritual advisor to the Beatles, even sitting in on recording sessions with them. Of course, the girls would begin to this, and they enthused to him about their own incredible musical leader. Dennis was intrigued, but had to go to a late night recording session, so he left the girls in his house. Which, Dennis!
Look, it is the 60s after all. And everybody is free and trusting and loving. I wouldn't even leave probably my sister in my house for more than 24 hours because she'd be up to carnage, no doubt. The fish would be dead. The food would be rotten. And
everything would be on fire.
Yeah. Look, I'm a very trusting person, but I would not let two strange girls that I've never met before stay in my Hollywood Hills mansion.
Yeah. And by the time Dennis got back, they had got on the blower to old Charlie Boy and they'd invited the gang around. So when Dennis returned home, his house was filled with unwashed, gonorrhea-ridden Manson family members.
Peace and love. It's the 60s.
Welcome home.
Oh my Christ, don't
Stinks
sit on the
it.
Sofa. Anybody got any cream?
Get that patchouli out.
Oh my Christ.
It's just incredibly, like, the amount of piss you are taking at that point where you're like, oh, this is our new house now. Okay, bye.
I thought you were going to say they pissed the sheets or something like
no.
that.
No.
Peace and love. Piss and love.
Piss and love.
We're really going off on a tangent. I blame the LSD we took just before we started this episode.
We thought it would make for an interesting episode.
Oh my God, there's the Area 51 abductee over there.
There's our friend.
Is that a sausage and pepperoni pizza over there?
Oh, I can see Slendy over there as well. Off he goes, voguing away. Have you not seen that TikTok?
No!
The Slender Man voguing.
Oh my Christ, yeah. I'm not sure if I actually want to see that one. Actually, no, I do want to see that.
It is pretty good, yeah. I'm into it. Okay, so Dennis returns home and he's now walking up his driveway, trying to make sense of the situation. Charles was standing right in his way. Dennis asked if teeny tiny 5'2" Manson was going to hurt him. And he replied, do I look like I'm going to? He then bent down and kissed both of his feet.
I mean, Whatever you're into, honey.
Dennis then spent the night partying with the family in their traditional way with copious amounts of LSD and an orgy.
Wow. So it begins.
This sudden home invasion wasn't all that odd to free-spirited Dennis. He was big into the counterculture, and at the time, big groups of hippies hanging out was just part of the scene, and he wanted to share his wealth with his new friends, much to the delight of them all. Now, this whole period is absolutely fascinating, but for time we're going to have to condense it down to its component parts, but I recommend reading about this further if you want to get in deep. But basically, Dennis ended up hosting the family for months in his home, using the girls of the Manson family as servants.
I'm not going to lie, though, Nikki. If you had a choice between a dilapidated bloody ranch with a creepy old 80-year-old or a mansion with money on the beach with a beach boy, what are you going to pick?
Yeah, that's what they've decided to do. They're like, okay, we'll just live here until we get kicked out. Because they know they will get kicked out.
Eventually.
Yeah, it's going to happen.
I mean, the way they act, I'm not surprised. They've lasted a couple months.
Yep. Dennis became embroiled in all things Manson. He even generously donated to the cause, basically giving away all his expensive things like his cars and donating hundreds of thousands of dollars, saying he was happy to get rid of his personal possessions so he could find himself. Charles had even convinced Dennis to make an album with him, Charles's dream coming true here. They had worked on an album with 10 songs for months, and Charles thought that he was going to become the next big thing. Dennis also introduced Charles to a record producer, Terry Melcher, who would later become Charles's fixation with everything that was wrong with Hollywood. But months passed and nothing happened with the promised album. Dennis was far too nice to tell Charles his songs weren't up to the quality of others in his circle, and the longer he left it without telling him the truth, the more Charlie thought he was going to get a record deal.
This is why you nip things in the bud.
After a particularly tense recording session where Charles basically threw his toys out of the pram when he felt inadequate at his own skill and with how things were going, he fired the producer. Charles was furious with Dennis and threatened both him and the producer, pulling a bullet out of his pocket and telling him to look at it and think how nice it was that he and his family were safe.
Right.
Creating a rod for your own back there. It's just not the way that you would react. I think he's ended up in the studio and has gone, hang on a minute, I can't actually do this. And instead of saying, I need a bit of time to work on it a bit further, he's just gone, I'll kill you both.
Do you know what I think it is as well? Small man syndrome.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of that.
Yeah. And after the revelation of 5'2" Manson, it's all making sense.
Yep. Dennis was understandably not impressed with this and picked Charlie up by the throat, throwing him on the ground and proceeding to beat the ever-loving shit out of him.
What in the WWE is going on here?
So with that being done, he put a very large nail in that coffin, and as such, he evicted the Manson family from Dennis's lovely Hollywood Hills mansion.
Davina McCall waiting outside.
Exactly. After this, and perhaps despite Manson, Dennis went on to actually release one of Manson's songs, which he'd named Cease to Exist. Wilson gave Manson about $100 worth of stuff and paid him off, crediting himself as the only writer of the song, renaming it Never Learn Not to Love, which the Beach Boys released as a B-side. And you can still hear it. You can put it, just type it into YouTube and you'll be able to hear it.
Is it on Spotify?
I think it probably is.
Gorgeous. I'll have a listen after.
Yeah, it's not a very good song.
Famously, it's by Manson. Are we surprised?
Yeah. Now, fast forwarding a short while to 1969, as well as hating the establishment and feeling betrayed by Hollywood, Charles has become quite paranoid. That'll be the drugs.
Yeah.
Like everyone in the 60s, the family loved the Beatles, but Charles was passionately obsessed. In particular, he listened to their latest record, The White Album, repeatedly, picking apart the lyrics to make them fit with his doctrine. And one song in particular, Helter Skelter, he imbibed with a dark meaning. Charles believed that the album was a warning of an impending race war, and that every song was littered with secret messages made just for him and the family. Unbeknownst to Charlie, who didn't know that the song Helter Skelter was just about a big slide, he began playing the song repeatedly, looking for more meaning behind it. He was convinced that shit was going to go down and that the race war was about to begin. So conveying this to the family, they began prepping, collecting dune buggies, canvas, knives and supplies to all go out and live in the desert to hide from the war. Charlie then started preaching that the events in the book of Revelations in the Bible was about to happen. There would be a second coming, and after this, Charles and his family would be on top. But the family was preparing for nothing, as the race war Charles was so sure was going to happen never materialised. And when questioned by his family members, he said it was because black people were too stupid to start it.
And here comes the racism. Oh my God. Do you know what? I felt it in the waters coming, and it was only a matter of time before he piped up and showed his true colours.
Yep. And it's just... Why are they all like this?
Because, yeah, small town, small-minded.
Small man. Full of hate and resentment at how nothing was going his way, he decided to take matters into his own hands and to kickstart the movement by killing high-profile white people in the hopes that the media would blame black people, and then murder some black people in the hopes it would make white people retaliate. It's just massive amounts of racism at this point.
The clutching at straws to try and explain their reasonings is beyond me right now.
In the meantime, the Manson family write a Hollywood hit list of those they'd like to murder. On the list are people like Elizabeth Taylor and her husband Richard Burton, Frank Sinatra, Tom Jones, and various other important producers and directors in the film and music industry, including his most hated music producer, Terry Melcher.
I'm surprised he's not top of the list.
Isn't it strange that Tom Jones is on that list as well? Because you would have thought, like, I Richard Burton, Elizabeth Taylor, Frank Sinatra, all in one kind of bracket time frame of Hollywood for me.
Yeah.
And then Tom Jones seems like he's not anywhere in that.
I cannot get my head around how long Tom Jones has been going on for. Like, it's ridiculous. But you know what? It's not unusual that he's on that list.
Hey! Because
he is Tom Jones, after all. And he is one hell of a sex bomb. So you'd want to get rid of him whilst you can.
My Delilah.
Wow. Why, Delilah?
Charles didn't actually know where Elizabeth Taylor and the other celebrities on his list lived, but he did know where Terry Melcher lived, as he gatecrashed a party there previously. However, Terry could be traced back to Charles, so in order for him to not get caught, he instructed Tex and a few of the girls to do his bidding for him. On the evening of August 9th, 1969, Tex snuck into one of the bedrooms on the Sparn Ranch and woke up Susan Atkins, Patricia Krenwinkel and Linda Kasabian. They had a special mission from Charles. They were to go to 10050 Cielo Drive, the home of Terry Melcher, and to kill everyone inside. There was just one problem with...
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
This plan. Terry had moved out ages ago, and the house had a new tenant, 8 months pregnant actor Sharon Tate.
All coming back.
And her filmmaker boyfriend, Roman Polanski. Polanski was out of town finishing up his latest movie, and so Sharon had invited her friends, ex-boyfriend and celebrity hairdresser Jay Sebring, who, yet another fun fact, popularised men shampooing their hair, and also the portable hairdryer.
Wow! Congratulations to him.
Friend of Roman's, writer Wojciech Frykowski, and heiress to Folger's Coffee, Abigail Folger, to stay after they'd all been out for a meal. But Tex and the girls from the Manson family didn't know the people in the house were not their intended targets. All they knew was that Charlie had said to kill everyone at Cielo Drive, and that's what they were going to do.
Oh no. I did wonder how this was all going to be connected, because as the story went on, obviously you want to assassinate the hit list. But now the piece of the puzzle makes sense. Like, they were just at the wrong place at the wrong time.
Okay, so things are going to get a bit grim here. So I'm just going to let you know that.
Okay, right. I'm going to take a little sit back in my chair. Yes. And I'm going to be ready to weep.
Okay. The family members pull up to the big gates of Cielo Drive under the cover of darkness and proceed to put into action the next steps of their plan. Tex climbs up a telegraph pole and cuts the phone wires to the house so no calls could be made to the police. They didn't open the gate in the fear that it might be alarmed, so they walked a little way up a hill and climbed over some bushes to get in. As soon as they get into the property, they see headlights coming up the hill towards them, pulling it into the driveway. Ordering the girls to stay hidden in the bushes, Tex walks towards the car, stops it, and tells the driver to get out. The driver was Stephen Parent, an 18-year-old who was visiting his friend in the guest house of the property. He sadly was in the wrong place at the wrong time. Tex slashes at Stephen with a knife, cutting his hands as he tries to defend himself. Tex then shoots Stephen 4 times in the abdomen, killing him. With Stephen out of the way, the group then heads up to the main house, looking for a way in. Linda sees an open window and Tex goes ahead to cut off the screening with his knife. They climb into the house where everyone is sleeping, but they make quite a bit of noise. Film producer Wojciech was the first one to wake up to the intruders. He was asleep on the sofa and woke up to find a strange man standing over him. Wojciech asked Tex who he was. Tex replied, "I'm the devil and I'm here to do the devil's business."
This is the cult talking.
I cannot even imagine how chilling and makes me feel quite ill.
Yeah.
Tex then orders Susan to do a sweep of the house. She comes back with Sharon, Jay and Abigail and brings them to the living room where Tex and Patricia are holding Wojciech hostage. Okay, so it's already fear-inducing, but this is where it does start to get really, really horrible. So if you are listening at home and you want to skip forward, then I won't blame you.
I wish I could skip forward.
Unfortunately, you can't do that, Cheryl, I'm afraid. Yeah. Tex ties Jay and Sharon together by their necks with a rope he brought with him from the ranch. Jay starts to protest, but can't for long as Tex shoots him point-blank in the face, killing him instantly. Abigail tries to pay the intruders off, having them take her back to her bedroom to find her purse, in which she has $70. But they just take the money, and Tex then stabs her 7 times. Meanwhile, Wojciech, who had been tied up but managed to free himself, starts to fight back, attacking Susan. But Tex reappears and takes him down, stabbing him. Wojciech incredibly manages to get away, but too injured, he only makes it out to the front lawn where he collapses, but Tex catches up to him. All in all, Tex stabbed Wojciech 51 times.
Look, remember the episode, the Slender Man one, where the child was stabbed 19 times? That was grueling to think about that, but 51 times, that is gruel.
It's just the amount of rage that must be going through your mind at that point if you're thinking to stab somebody that amount of times.
But they have no association with these people.
No.
At all. They're just sent on a mission. So they are that brainwashed that they will just go see red and go, let's go.
We've been told to do this, so we're going to go and do it now.
Yeah.
Okay, so whilst all this chaos is happening, Linda, who had been waiting outside on watch, walks through the front door after hearing the shouts from the victims. Suddenly, she starts regretting everything. She actually tries to stop the murders at this point, telling the other girls that a guard was coming, even though no one was. Abigail, at this point, was still alive after having been stabbed 7 times and had tried to make it out onto the lawn to run for help. But just like Wojciech, she was caught and was stabbed 21 more times. Back in the house, Sharon was bargaining with the killers, asking if she could be held as a hostage for long enough so she could have her baby. But the killers sadly didn't accept her plea. Sharon was stabbed 16 times, killing her and subsequently her unborn baby. They had one more job from Charles before they left the property. He had told them to leave a sign, something witchy. So using a towel, they used Sharon's blood to write the word pig on the front door. This was to replicate writing that had been left at a previous murder site of Gary Hinman that one of the family had been implicated in, Bobby Beausoleil. So the police would think the murderer was still out there and Bobby would be released. So that's your guy that did your 5'2"
yes.
writing.
Yes.
After the horrors they'd committed inside Cielo Drive, the gang calmly left the mansion, having gone completely unnoticed by any of the neighbours. They went and changed their clothes and dumped the bloodstained ones in the Hollywood Hills along with their murder weapons. Their mission was complete and Charlie would be very proud of them. The next morning, the housekeeper of 10050 Cielo Drive arrived at work to find a horrific scene and alerted the police. However, upon returning home and boasting about what they'd done, Charles was apparently not impressed. He didn't like the panic that it had caused for the victims and wanted to show the girls and Tex how it was done.
No. No, right, okay, I thought that was going to be it. I thought that was going to be five horrific murders. You did your job. Well done. But no, more.
So the next night, Charles takes a drive with Tex, Linda and Patricia, as well as two more members of the family, Leslie Van Houten and Clem Grogan. They drive around for a bit, aimlessly looking for someone to target before Charles gets an idea. He instructs the group to head for 3301 Waverley Drive, an address next door to somewhere they'd been to a party previously, knowing that someone rich would live there. The two strangers they were about to murder happened to be supermarket executive Leno LaBianca and his wife, Rosemary. Once they got there, Charles gets out of the car and instructs the others to stay in there before he disappears up the driveway and then returns a little bit later to say that he'd tied up the couple. The group then heads up to the house and Tex covers Leno and Rosemary's heads with pillowcases, tying the cases to their necks with lamp cords to make sure they couldn't take them off. Then Charles tells Patricia and Leslie to kill Rosemary. Tex, being the most vicious of the group, attacks Leno with a bayonet, stabbing him in the throat.
What's a bayonet?
It's a bit on the end of a gun. So it's like in the war, you'd have your gun, but then you'd also have a knife attached to the end of it. So if you ran out of ammunition, you could still stab people.
Oh my God!
Yeah, vile.
And seeing as this is America, they could probably buy that in the shop.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I don't like that.
Tex doesn't get another blow in. He's distracted by the sounds of a scuffle in the next room. He enters the bedroom to find Rosemary putting up a fight, brandishing the lamp which was attached to the rope tied around her neck and lashing out at Patricia and Leslie. Tex jumps in, attacking Rosemary, stabbing her several times with the bayonet before returning to the living room to resume attacking Leno, who he stabbed 12 more times. To leave yet another message behind at the crime scene, he then carved the word war into Leno's stomach.
How sick of a human do you have to be to do this?
It's just such a long amount of time as well. It's just, ugh, horrible. Tex then went back into the bedroom to check on the girls and Rosemary to find Leslie stabbing Rosemary all over her body. All in all, Rosemary was stabbed 41 times. Although a post-mortem showed that most of these wounds were inflicted after she had died. Thank God. Yeah. Tex then cleaned his bayonet and jumped in the shower.
Casual. Let me just have a shower at the scene of the crime.
Yes, fine.
Let me use their hot water they're paying for. What a stupid bastard.
Meanwhile, Patricia got to work writing Rise and Death to Pigs on the walls in blood. She also wrote Helter Skelter on the fridge door, but she misspelt it, so it read Helter Skelter.
I mean.
Yeah. And if that wasn't enough, she then, in a weird murderous possession, went back into the living room and picked up a pronged carving fork, stabbing an already dead Leno 14 times with it before she grabbed a steak knife and then shoved it into his neck.
They're dead. Leave them. You have murdered and taken their lives. What more can you get from putting a bloody steak knife into their neck? If anything, you are causing more damage to yourself.
Yeah, it's just, I don't even understand at this point where how they've got to this end point.
So we're now 7 people dead.
Yeah. Charles, meanwhile, had left with the other 3 girls and drove them to the house of Lebanese actor Saladin Nader. He dropped them off and returned home to the ranch. He'd instructed the girls to kill Saladin, but Linda, the one who took charge of the other 2 girls, was done. She claimed that she ended the plans by purposefully knocking on the wrong door and waking up a total stranger. Everyone had had enough except Susan Atkins, who was riled up and intent on making her mark. And so, in a gross and final act of defiance, she took a shit in the stairwell.
Sure.
Of course.
I mean, she really wanted to make her mark. And, like, I think bodily fluids... is that one thing that really tips people over the edge. Like, you know when somebody is such a shitty tenant and there's like the TV shows of like people have gone and reclaimed their houses, it's always like a shit in the living room. And they're like, that's human. I'm like, what fucked up person would do that? Why? I can, look, if worse comes to worse and I had to literally shit in a wood, I would do it. But I will do everything within my power to make it to a toilet because that is my worst nightmare.
So the Manson family went back to their ranch, boasting about what they'd done for Charlie to the others. They were proud that they'd proved themselves worthy of their leader. 19 hours after Rosemary and Leno were murdered, their bodies were discovered and reported to the police. For some reason, despite their obvious similarities, the police in Los Angeles didn't connect the Tate and LaBianca murders for months. In fact, they would have probably never connected the murders to the family at all if it hadn't been for an unconnected arrest. On August the 16th, just a week after the murders, police raided Spahn Ranch on information that the Manson family were part of a car theft ring.
Back to the car thief!
Yep. They can't help themselves.
No, hot wires.
They'd been stealing cars from across LA, turning them into dune buggies for their escape into the desert from the race war.
Yeah.
Of course, ooh, yeah.
Grab the top.
Now, even though they found a bunch of stolen dune buggies, they dropped the charges and the Manson family, getting worried, upped and left Spahn Ranch for Barker Ranch.
Oh, poor George.
But they weren't there long. Police were still suspicious and in October arrested the family again for car theft. This time, a bunch of them went to jail, including one of the murderers, Susan Atkins.
It was a poo.
Maybe she was just leaving poos in all the cars.
Yeah, yeah, that's what it was. She didn't know how to use a toilet, so she thought the dune buggies were the toilet.
Just leave it rolling around in the back seat, it'll be fine.
Susan. Susan.
Bloody Susan, yeah. Our downfall. Whilst in jail, Susan got to talking to a couple of career criminals, and in a bid to impress them, she told them all about her part in the murders. She straight up told them that she was the one that killed Sharon Tate and she'd tasted her blood.
What?
Yep.
Now that is just bragging.
Yep.
And that never gets you anywhere. Bragging gets you nowhere. And sorry, darling, you're gone for life.
Her cellmates went straight to the authorities to hand over the information as they knew they'd probably be well rewarded for this. And not long after, arrest warrants were issued for Tex, Linda, Patricia, Leslie, and of course their leader... Charlie Manson.
5'2".
The trial began on July the 15th, 1970, but it wasn't until July 24th that Charles appeared in court with his infamous X carved into his forehead. I don't know if you've seen any of those pictures, but when he went on trial, he'd carved an X into his forehead just between his eyebrows.
What, with like a knife?
Yeah.
And it just like scarred?
Yeah.
Why?
So his followers issued a statement saying that he had X'd himself from the world.
He really said, break up, bye bye.
The next day, Leslie, Susan and Patricia all appeared in court with X's carved into their foreheads as well, because you got to be a member of the cult.
You got to be a little bat.
The trend spread throughout the followers of the Manson family, who had camped on the street outside the courtroom, all carving X's into their foreheads. Well done, everybody. One member of the Manson family, though, who was not playing ball, was Linda Kasabian. Remember that she tried to stop the Tate murders and that she stopped the Saladin murder as well.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she was following through with her rejection of the Manson family values by testifying against the lot of them at court. Well done, Linda.
I would pay good money to be a jury in that, just to watch that one moment of her being like, well, actually.
Yeah, walking in and just flipping the bird to all of them around the room.
Take that, motherfuckers.
She gave graphic testimonies to the court about exactly what happened at both murder scenes, damning the accused. She received immunity for her testimony and went into hiding after the trial was over. It was a messy and long trial, punctuated by the girls chanting about President Nixon. And at one point, Charles, being a monumental knobhead, jumped off his lawyer's table with a sharpened pencil, aiming it straight at the judge, screaming, in the name of Christian justice, someone should cut your head off. Not sure you're going to be able to do that with a sharpened pencil, but...
Oh. Let me just add to the shopping list whilst I'm here.
Yeah, let's take his head. And it gets worse. Leslie's lawyer, Ronald Hughes, was found dead in California during the trial. His body was so messed up that the cops couldn't determine a cause of death, but some think that he was killed by the Manson family.
Yeah, it's like the mob and the mafia. You don't go against the family.
Yeah, and it's very interesting because he was out camping and then his body was found completely destroyed.
That's where he went wrong. He went camping.
He wasn't protected.
You wouldn't catch me camping, that's for sure. Again, I'd be caught out without having a poo and a toy.
Straight into the woods.
Yeah.
Does Cheryl shit in the woods? Yes, she does.
Only if I need to.
Charles even testified at the trial, saying, are you ready for this?
Yeah, I'm ready.
These children that come at you with knives, they are your children. You taught them. I didn't teach them. I just tried to help them stand up. Most of the people at the ranch that you call the family were just people that you did not want. I know this, that in your hearts and your souls, you are as much responsible for the Vietnam War as I am for killing these people. I can't judge any of you. I have no malice against you and no ribbons for you, but I think that it is high time that you all start looking at yourselves and judging the lie that you live in. My father is the jailhouse. My father is your system. I am only what you made me. I am only a reflection of you. You want to kill me? Ha, I am already dead. I have been all my life. I've spent 23 years in tombs that you have built.
He said he never wanted to leave. And look what's happened.
His father is the jailhouse.
And I'm sure he'll be saying, hello, daddy, I'm back.
I think it's pretty, you can tell though, just from that little statement, that he's pretty compelling. Like, it's the way that he speaks is very leadery, very churchy, isn't it?
Very culty.
Yes, very, you know, preacher kind of thing. I can see how people could be drawn in by it. Finally, on January the 25th, 1971, 9 months after the trial began, the jury found Charles Manson, Patricia Krenwinkel, Susan Atkins, and Leslie Van Houten guilty of first-degree murder. Charles Tex Watson, who had been waiting to stand trial after going on hunger strike and losing 55 pounds, was eventually also convicted of first-degree murder on October the 12th of that year. And the arrests just kept coming, with members of the family convicted of assaults and thefts. Remember Lynette Squeaky Froom?
Mm-hmm.
This is an interesting one for you.
Oh, here we go.
She was later convicted of an assassination attempt on President Gerald Ford in the Manson family name in 1975 because Ford wasn't doing enough to combat pollution. She tried to shoot him, but the gun didn't go off.
Oh, Squeaky, what are you playing at, girl?
Yeah, it's because they were still big hippies at this point and she didn't think that there was enough being done about the pollution problem. Which, she's not wrong, but...
She's the one that's still alive today, right?
Yes.
Yeah, well, she must be hating herself in 2022 with the issues we're having right now.
Having a real bad time.
Oh, God, yeah.
So, where are they now? Charles was initially sentenced to death, but after the California Supreme Court overturned capital punishment in 1972, his sentence was reduced to life in prison. In typical Charles fashion, he had hundreds of rules violations and was in constant trouble with prison officials. He had phones, homemade weapons, and was a general huge pain in the arse, as you can imagine. He was also constantly used as a target by other inmates due to his fame, and he was, in a roundabout sort of circle way, set on fire by an inmate in 1984, giving him second and third degree burns. He was denied parole 12 times, thank God, and died in prison at the age of 83 from a combo of cancer and a heart attack in 2017. Patricia Krenwinkel is now California's longest serving female inmate, still in prison at the age of 74. She reportedly regrets her part in the murders and has urged people not to view Charles as a hero. Leslie Van Houten, now 72, is also still in prison. She has been disciplinary free for her entire sentence, but has been denied parole every time she's applied for it.
Good.
Susan Atkins transformed into a born-again Christian during her time inside and asked for forgiveness for her crimes. She married twice whilst inside. She died in prison aged 61 from cancer. Bobby Beausoleil has been denied parole several times, but continues to have a thriving music career from behind bars, even forming a prison band, which included one of the other killers, Clem Grogan. Steve Clem Grogan was the only one of the murderous Manson family to ever be released. In 1985, he drew a map, which led police to the body of Donald Shea, a ranch hand who lived on the Sparn Ranch. He said that along with Manson, Tex, and another family member, Bruce, they'd killed the man and buried him on the ranch. As a result of his cooperation and his lawyer putting up a good fight, saying Clem was drugged and manipulated by Charlie, he was allowed parole.
And how did that go?
Well, still out there today. Yeah, still alive. Hasn't killed anybody that I know of. Allegedly.
To the best of our knowledge.
Allegedly.
Don't come for us, Manson family loyalties.
And Charles's right-hand man, Tex Watson, was also initially sentenced to death, but ended up with life in prison after the death sentence was overturned. Mm-hmm. And boy, has he had a lot of life in prison. He got married, fathered four children, got divorced, and has become an ordained minister, all inside prison. He's still there, and he's now age 76.
How? Lots of conjugal visits, I'm guessing.
Yes.
All right. How do you become an ordained minister? What, you're marrying people within a prison?
Well, I assume so.
What? Do you know what? I would love to be a fly on the wall for a day in prison just to see what actually goes on in there. Not because I want to go to prison. I want to see how people are treated, what people bloody get away with. And also, I want to see what the showers are like. I think I'd be very good in the showers in prison.
It's not like the movies you've watched, I think.
Okay. One can hope. I'll save that for my abduction dream.
And little Lynette Squeaky Froome, after serving 34 years inside for her assassination attempt, was released in 2009 at the age of 60 years old. She is still in love with Charlie, saying in 2019, "I feel honoured to have met him. Am I in love with Charlie? Oh yeah, still am. I don't think you ever fall out of love." And that was the story of the Manson family.
I need to lay down.
Yeah, me too.
I'm exhausted. I mean, it was great. I've learnt a lot. They were fucked up, that's for sure. We can blame LSD. We can blame Charles, famously.
Yeah, it's quite a journey.
What a journey.
Yeah, and if you, I really urge you, if you are interested at all after hearing just that tiny little snippet of what we've divulged in today, then please do go and do some more research on this, because I've found it absolutely fascinating. And yeah, I'm definitely going to learn a bit more, I think.
I mean, we're curious cats. We want to learn more.
Exactly. So, we just have to say the knowledge out there on this topic is vast and much more than we can fit in one episode.
I mean, we did it in two.
Exactly. So, please check our sources if you want to find out more.
Yes, and if you have been affected by any of the themes in this episode, please have a look at the description for lots of helpful resources.
Next time on Killers, Cults and Queens.
We're getting creepy, Cheryl Creepy Hole, and looking at some of the most iconic creepypastas of all time.
We're talking the Russian sleep experiment.
I took a nap right here. Subscribe or follow to make sure that you never miss an episode of Killers, Cults and Queens. And if you have a case or a story you'd like us to cover, drop us a DM.
See you next time, and don't be a killer or join a cult.
Definitely not. Just be a fabulous, fabulous queen. Goodbye.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.